I guess we should pledge to.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we have visitors. And thank you, Jay.
So you're okay?
Thank you. Yep, we're good. Thank you. Since we have some visitors, we'll introduce yourselves and we'll go around the table and introduce ourselves.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my name's Alan Moses. I'm originally from Michigan, but I've lived in Brooklyn for many years. And I'm an architect, 30, 40, 35 years, something experience, depending on how you look at it. Design all kinds of buildings. Architects mostly are about problem solving and through analysis, and that's why I'm here. Steve.
Okay. Steve Goodman. My wife and I have been in Rosendale for 5 years. Before that, Queens, Manhattan, Bronx, but we love it up here. My background is in advertising, but currently, for the past 3.5 years, I've been on the board of directors at the High Falls Food Co-op, and I'm currently the co-president over there.
My name is Stefan Lubitsch. Originally, I'm from Congo, Africa. I'm a physician, and I've been working with Alan for almost 12 years, and we met at City College. And here I'm a medical consultant to this project.
This project was not 12 years old. It was other projects, too. But go ahead.
I'm Tracy Bartels. I'm a county legislator, a member of the committee, and I represent Gardner and Shawn.
We should jump back there.
Dave Haldeman, chairman of the Postal County Environmental Council from the town of Shawn.
And you can sit at the table if you'd like.
I'm up and join us.
Okay.
My name's Laura Petit. I'm an Ulster County legislator, and I represent people in Esopus.
Kathy Nolan. I am not a member of this committee, just sitting in, and I represent the western towns of Ulster County, Shenandoah, Olive, Denning, and Hardinburg.
My name is Brian Waltman. I'm a county legislator and a member of this committee, and I represent the one-third of the city of Kingston.
And I'm Fawn Tantillo. I'm the deputy clerk and clerk for this committee.
And I'm Mary Worrell. I'm the chair of the committee, and I'm a legislator from Saugerties.
Okay.
And Mary Jo should be coming in.
Manager
should be coming in any second.
Yes. So we might want to wait. Well, do we have a motion to approve minutes? Can we do it, or do we have to wait for Anna for that?
No, you don't.
Okay. We have a quorum.
Yeah, we have a quorum.
So moved by Waltman.
And I'll second it.
Okay. Does any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. We didn't quite come on time for Amanda, but we'll give her a second. Don't want you to miss anything.
Enjoying the view and the atmosphere.
It is quite a view.
Coming
it's
from Brooklyn,
day.
You don't see much green.
My son lives in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah? What part?
I thought a tree grew in Brooklyn.
You didn't ask me that. He's on Smith Street.
Oh, and
it's over towards the park, where the water on the waterfront.
Yeah, it's just there yesterday. It's called.
Is it by Brooklyn Heights?
Yeah, near Brooklyn Heights, Cobble Hill.
So, as an architect, is there anything you can do with this building to make it blend into?
I love period architecture. Whatever period is, this is real period architecture.
Ooh,
1960s. You know, it's really something.
It's, yeah.
Insane. I got a rush when I saw it. It's kind of ugly, but
it's not. I like it. It's distinguishing. You know, I've always liked
it. A little bit later than that, but I think of the late. I know we became a legislature in this like 65, and so I think I want to say like
it
was
1970.
Like
no, it predates 1970. Yeah. This building, I grew up in Kingston. I was born in 62, and I. Don't ever remember when this wasn't here.
The architects that I was.
So I have to go down and check the cornerstone.
Study, who were my professors, my teachers in architecture school, this is what they were doing.
Yeah, and there was a prototype.
And they're crazy guys.
So I've heard that there's a story, some kind of, as it relates to the facade of this building, there was a prototype of, I think, I want to say Pittsburgh paints, but I can't be sure. But there's something
Pittsburgh
about it.
Glass. Yeah.
Pittsburgh glass.
Manager
maybe there
was
a
PPG.
Yeah. So.
Six.
Yeah, the mullions.
They got. They got.
Probably experimental. In
yeah, I think that was the case. It was
high tech at the time. High tech in 1965.
Manager, they just voted on the minutes for May 3rd. Do you
Welcome, Anna.
And for your benefit, Anna, I just want to introduce, we have Alan Moses from New York City. He's an architect in New York. Steve Goodman is in your district. And Dr. Stephen Lupitz, originally from the Congo, and has been working with Alan on some, as a medical consultant on some different projects, including their plastic bag concerns.
So do you want to wait and do the resolutions and hear what your guests have to say?
Let's see here for our guests.
Okay. Let's begin. First of all, I want to thank the committee for allowing us to speak here today. We have a ton of information, but relax, we're not sharing it all today. It really just scratches the surface. So we've even prepared our own reports on bags, made copies of it, all kinds of stuff. We've been doing research into this stuff. Once we got into it and discovered some things, we've been just digging and digging, coming up with all sorts of stuff.
Matt, these are the related to the single-use plastic bags?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it's all related to that. So my name is Steve Goodman. You heard who I was. I've been living up here for 5 years. We absolutely applaud the good intentions of this committee, I want to say, first of all, because in trying to move Ulster County to do the right thing about plastic bag abuse, it's a noble intention. Here's the problem as we see it. Before making any decision about bags, whatever that decision ends up being, and moving large numbers of people to reusable bags, we ask that we look at all the legitimate studies that have been done about the impact on health and the environment, you know, and learn from them. Because one of the big thing that we found, that was a review that was done in 2006, that ended up being in the UK, that was released in 2011, because the powers that be there didn't want it released, because it was like, oh my God, is this what you found? So with haggling back and forth, they finally released it. They basically found that, we were surprised to find this, that looking at all the full life cycle assessment of all different kinds of bags, that plastic bags, when reused as trash bags or anything else, were actually the greenest way to go, considering how the bags were produced and all kinds of stuff.
Compared to other kinds of
Compared to other kinds of reusable bags, other kinds of plastic bags, cloth bags, paper bags, the whole deal. There's also this big study that was an outgrowth of that just came out a couple of years ago from Clemson University, life cycle assessment of grocery bags in common use in the United States.
That one's on your pad, and we have copies.
190 pages of fun reading.
Do you have copies of the first one that's referenced?
But I'll get...
I'll get you the link to it. That's also a link.
Mm-hmm. What's the name of that study? Sorry, the first one.
The first one. Evidence, the life cycle.
It's from the Environment Agency of the UK. Life cycle assessment of supermarket carrier bags. Yeah, it can be found online just by looking, but a lot of the stuff that we're talking about today, we have copies. We have actually five because we didn't know everybody else was coming too. But we have five take-home kits that's got a lot of the stuff in there.
Any of the links that we're mentioning are in this report, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know,
if you would give the chairman, and we will make copies for any of the legislators. And I need one for Brian.
Thank you.
And so I'll take that one in, and I'll make copies for you. So I have it for the next. Thanks.
But both of these big studies separately came to pretty much the same conclusion that 60 to 70% of folks already reuse plastic grocery bags. I mean, a lot of them don't get reused, but about over half of them do get reused for trash and for other stuff. So they're not really single-use bags after all, but they've gotten a bad rap. Like it or not, we are a society that consumes a lot of stuff and produces a lot of trash in everywhere around the world, but especially here, it seems. We all carry stuff home that we buy, and we all need to dispose of the resulting trash. So to look, you know, single-handedly just at the plastic bag situation, there are too many plastic bags out there. But to just say, let's get rid of them, the problem is then you got to go buy thicker plastic bags to throw away your trash. We'll get into it in just a couple of minutes, but really what we see is it's education. We'll get into that in just a second. There's one thing I just want to mention here. Maybe you may have seen this. There was a story that came out in the paper a couple of days ago about, it was a horrible story, about a whale in Thailand that died from consuming 80 plastic bags. And the first thing, I mean, I just saw the headline. Everybody just saw the headline, maybe a little bit of the story. First thing you think of is, oh my God, there are those nasty plastic bags from the supermarkets again. Somehow this thing consumed 80 of them. It's a horrible thing. It's a good thing we're getting rid of them here. Oh boy. But when I looked further, of course I tapped that. When I looked further at the story to see what it looked like, slightly disgusting. But this is the innards of the whale. And they're all black bags, like these guys here.
That's what the whale was eating.
We couldn't find any more detail on it. But what must have happened is, due to the not as good sanitary disposal conditions in Thailand as here, they must have had the giant plastic bags of trash. Maybe they washed away in a big storm into the water. Maybe they were just thrown into the ocean. Whale comes along and says, hey, I smell food in there. Gobble, gobble, gobble. And ended up with all these bags. We're not saying you should ban these kind of bags. It's just that whatever kind of bags you have, base decisions on what the facts are and
resource, the best use of resource.
It's reasonable use of everything and education so that the correct thing is done with whatever kind of thing. Looking at the full life cycle and the full scope of how people buy stuff and how people throw them away. But we absolutely admit this plastic bag abuse. There are too many bags. When people get the cheap bags in the supermarket, they end up with them doubling and you take home 20 bags, it's like, what the hell am I going to do with all these bags? That's abuse. We know that because there's only a limited number you can throw out your stuff in. So we got stuff that we're recommending of how to do that. With that, I'm going to introduce, because we don't want to take up too much of your time, Alan, to talk about the green issues when it comes to supermarket grocery bags.
And as Steve said before, we're scratching the surface right now because, you know, we just, first of all, it would take a long time and a lot of it would be very boring. So this report by Professor, by Clemson University, Professor Kimmel, this is a 190-page report. We became pretty good friends with him. He really applauded what we're doing because nobody knew about this. Mm-hmm. We found it online, and nobody knew about it. And he actually gave us quite a nice, what is that called again? A nice
recommendation.
Yeah, for what we're doing. And he gave us a one-page summary of the 190 pages. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about that. And basically what the summary says is that study covers lightweight plastic bags, which he doesn't refer to them as single-use bags. In fact, he was very critical of the study done by the Governor's Commission because they are multi-purpose bags. 60 to 70% of the bags are reused. That's a known fact because they've studied this. So when you take those bags out of circulation, then you got to buy these bags or other bags because they're using them for something. So now, the study covered lightweight plastic bags, paper bags, covered heavyweight reusable bags. Those are called the bags for life. They're very thick, and they're supposed to be reusable. Then it also covered non-woven polypropylene bags like this
right there.
One. These are the ones that everybody uses, the vast majority. I think it was 55% of reusable bags are these. Now, some of the issues are, when it comes to paper bags like these, which they double, you have to reuse these six times because of, you know, all the pollution and energy, cutting down the trees, all the resource use of paper bags.
Cost to transport them?
Yeah. For every truckload of paper, you get seven truckloads. It's the other way around. For every truckload of plastic, you get seven truckloads of paper. So huge numbers of trucks just to carry these things around with all the CO2 emissions and all the trucks tearing up the highways, you know, forget it. So this has two bags. You'd have to reuse this 12 times. They don't reuse them. The British government in their report said recycling paper is a wash. There's no benefit. Just don't use it because of the amount of energy, the amount of water, the amount of detergents, bleach, chemicals that you need to recycle paper. If you just don't use it in the first place, it's great. In the environmental movement, it's reduce, reuse, recycle. And that order is there for a specific reason. first of all, if you reduce, you use less stuff. You just don't got the stuff. Secondly, reuse. If you're going to have the stuff, reuse it. You got to reuse it once or twice, as best you can. Recycling is the last ditch effort because recycling costs a lot of money. It costs a lot of money in transportation. All kinds of reasons that recycling is problematic. So, one thing that you know in when it comes to resources is that if you're spending more money, you're using more stuff. You're using more resources. If you have one of these bags, for example, that this bag I didn't mention takes 30 times. You have to reuse this 30 times to be as green as plastic shopping bags, lightweight plastic shopping bags. People, according to the studies, use this 16 times. Now I'm going to digress a little bit from what I was going to say, but in Austin, Texas, they had a bag ban, just like you want to do here. Some of you who want to do a bag ban. I shouldn't have said that. Let me rephrase it. Austin, Texas did a bag ban that we can look at as an example so we don't perhaps make the same mistakes that they did. And Bloomberg News, and it's in our report, Bloomberg News did a study on the bag ban in Austin, Texas. And they said that people use these bags instead of 30 times, instead of 16 times, they use them once, twice, three times, and then threw them away. Because the studies also show you forget these bags 40% of the time. To try to get people to remember them is not really a great idea. You could keep them in your car, but all the health studies from California, New York, everywhere says don't keep them in your car because the heat and the humidity will cause them to go crazy bad for health reasons.
And it's not just us. New York State, as we'll be talking about in
New York
minute,
State, yeah.
Said, play it safe, wash them all the time, don't keep them in your car. They didn't make this stuff up. This is New York State a few years ago.
New York State Department of Health.
Yeah.
So the reusable bags have a lot of green problems. They're never used enough in Austin, Texas. And what they found are that people, instead of reusing the plastic shopping bags they had for trash, now they're buying these plastic garbage bags. So now they got all these plastic garbage bags that they bought. They're buying all of these. It's actually quite expensive. If they wash them all the time, if they were to do that, that's all the water, detergents,
and it's
energy
to
dry them. Yeah, most of them you can't wash. They fall apart anyway. And you don't want to wash this with your clothes. You know, so you're washing it separately. So it's really, really not green at all. It's bad news. The only problem, so I called them up and I said, well, okay, Austin, Texas, why are you keeping your bag? And they said, because they're finding less plastic shopping bags in the storm drains. In other words, litter. So then I said, I cited to them, this is in our report also, in San Francisco, they had a bag ban in 2008. In 2007, they did a litter survey. One of the things before anybody does any legislation is they have to do studies constantly about what the effects of the legislation are. So you have to get your facts together instead of saying, I think this is what it is. You have to see what the litter is before and what it is after. So San Francisco did that. They did a litter survey in 2007, and they found 24 representative samples. Then they took out of circulation 52 supermarkets. 52 major supermarkets, millions of bags for six, but they did not ban convenience stores and takeout restaurants or pharmacies. So 6 months into the ban, they took another litter survey and they found 25 representative samples of litter. So the litter was not coming from the supermarkets. If you want to stop litter, and I said to him, if you want to stop litter, then just ban the bags from convenience stores and takeout restaurants. Why would you ban the bags from supermarkets when now the result is huge amounts of plastic? Because people are not reusing these bags enough. They're not washing them. That's another subject. And they're buying these bags. Now they got, instead of reducing stuff, where they had one bag before, they had two bags for, let's say, I don't know, 60% of bag use, which is a lot. So this is what they found in Austin, Texas. Another case is in the state of South Australia, where they had a bag ban. Before the ban, the government said said 15% of households bought plastic garbage bags. After the ban, 80% of households bought plastic garbage bags. And the government came out and said, look, it's a wash. You know, we haven't done anything here. All that effort for nothing. So the real question always is going to be, you're going to ban bags from any source. You have to find the litter source and ban it there. And I would say in supermarkets as well, if there's takeout in supermarkets, you know, anytime people take stuff out onto the street to eat it, snack, it's going on the street.
Right. When most supermarket stuff is bought, it goes home. It doesn't get discarded on the way. So the question is, how is that stuff going to get discarded? The real issue is, it would be ideal if somebody gets 5 plastic bags a week from the store where they pay for them, where they're free, use them to throw away the trash. It's a wash. The problem is, when you got 20 bags coming home when you're only using 5, there are 15 and they pile up, and what do you do with them? So that's the issue we're going to be addressing just in a moment. Let's move on to the health issue real quick. Studies have shown there's a danger of contamination inside and outside the bags. And it's not just us saying this. C. diff, salmonella, lots more. There's this New York State guideline that we've been talking about briefly. What's interesting there is what they said was, when you carry food or other items in these bags, reusable bags, they may leave behind germs like E. coli or salmonella.
Yes.
If the bags are not properly washed and dried before they are used again, these germs remain and can make you sick. This is the New York State saying this. It's a real issue. They also said, do not store them in a cartridge, where no matter what gets into the bag a little bit, leaks out of a little plastic bag that's in there, it can cause problems. Not only that, but the outside of the bags are a problem. More so in a more urban area, but even in a place like Kingston, somebody walks with the bag home, they put it down on the floor, maybe there's a little stray piece of dog poop there. Then they put that into the shopping cart at the supermarket, then they put it on near the conveyor belt, then they put it on their kitchen counter. And you always have to balance convenience, safety, and being as green as possible. And we're saying, look at all those factors, and not just say, we're going to be green, let's do this. Look at everything. We want there to be less bags. You know, absolutely.
Are you citing the study from San Francisco, from Click and Write?
No, but you are.
Oh, okay. So I'll just mention this. There was a study. You can go online to a YouTube video by someone named Jonathan Click. He's a professor at University of Pennsylvania. And he's a professor of economics and law. And him, together with a fellow named Professor Wright, they heard about all this information from Gerba, Sinclair. There are a number of, we have these reports, a number of departments of public, of universities of public health, where they looked at bags as vectors for disease. And so they saw this information. They decided, okay, we're going to go to San Francisco's bag ban, and we're going to see what happened as far as health. We're going to go to the statistics for the emergency room visits and death rates. And what they found was that emergency room visits in San Francisco, not across the border outside of San Francisco, that emergency room visits went up by 50 to 100% for intestinal type of problems. And death rates, they attributed 50 to 100%, 6 to 10 extra people a year, that happened as well. And they have a video presentation on YouTube. You know, it's one of the links in our report where you can watch Professor Click talk about how it's not worthwhile to use reusable bags if you're going to have this much illness, that it doesn't translate to him. You know, he looked at it from an economic point of view, said how much each dead person was worth, each extra dead person was worth. Now, having said that, I called up Austin, Texas, and I said, did you look at emergency rooms at visits? Did you take a look at the health, possible health implications? They said, no, we didn't. The only place that they looked was in San Francisco, and that's where they found. And across the border, they didn't find it. The city of San Francisco went crazy. Their epidemiologist said, you have to show the microbes in the bag. You have to show a number of other things. You're not dealing with proper medical epidemiology. But you know, across the border, everybody said something happened. Across the border, from San Francisco, nothing changed. Mm-hmm. The statistics didn't change at all. And so if you look at places like wherever they're doing the bag bans, nobody looked, and they won't look, and they don't want to look. I presented, we created a paper here called, where's this one?
This rethink?
You have it.
New York something?
New York, the dilemma?
No, this one, rethink. Rethink bags, New York City health policy. We did this together with Dr. Lubitsch. And it talks
and
about
we met with a number of New York City Council members.
Yeah, about all this stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I presented this to a professor at the Graduate School for Public Health in CUNY, and they said they would like, in the fall, like to have a master's student do a thesis on that, to look at it and see what the story is. Problem is that the burden of proof is to say that reusable bags aren't going to make you sick. If you're going to ban plastic bags, you better be really sure that what the C. diff Foundation is saying. The C. diff Foundation says, I think we gave that to you in this thing here. The C. diff Foundation says to wash the bags every single time you use them. C. diff kills 15,000 people a year. It's probably up to 20 now.
But nobody, very few people wash these bags as often as they should. Some people wash them a little bit.
15% of people have ever washed them. That's the...
Yeah, then I just want to say, in California, they did guidelines also that went even further. They got a lot more detail. But I just want to point one thing out. Cloth bag I got from Mohawk a couple of years ago. And talk about the washing instructions. This was produced by a company called EnviroTote. Very nice, made in America. Cold water wash, line dry washing not recommended because it could harm this. So without an education program, even if somebody has this bag, they're going to say, oh, I don't have to wash it. It says not recommended. I better not wash it. And yet you got New York State and California and the C. diff Foundation saying, whoa, you better wash this to be safe because you can't guarantee everybody's going to have everything contained. Stuff is going to leak out in there. It goes in the car.
And if you're washing,
you're asking
it's not
for
green.
Trouble.
It's not green. It's not going to be green. It's going to be off the chart. You wash those every day, which you can't do anyway. They'll just
couple more things real quick. Parade magazine, huge magazine in terms of circulation, last September, had a little summary of healthy habits that can haunt you on reusing grocery bags. Talking
from
about this
Professor
Dr.
Sinclair, from Professor Sinclair.
Professor Sinclair from the
Loma Linda
University. What he did was he said it has to do with the contamination of reusable bags from foodborne pathogens that may originate from private homes. That there were the CDC 6 years ago said there were over 38 million cases of foodborne illnesses with unknown origins, and it's now well documented. This is what he said, the doctor, that reusable grocery bag is as clean as the soles of dirty shoes or underwear, and it's just a nightmare waiting to happen. You know?
I'll tell you something I found online a few years ago when I was researching this. There's a company, I think in England, and they take shellfish and they crunch up the shells, which are antibacterial, and they put that into the synthetic fabric of the bag to make an antimicrobial bag. Which I don't know if I want near my food, and
I just want to talk about
crazy stuff.
To wrap things up. What's our recommendation from all this research we've been doing? And really it can be summarized in a few words, education and freedom of choice. For the reusable grocery bags, what we're saying is post this New York State stuff, wherever reusable grocery bags are sold or used, provide shoppers with real information in the interest of public safety, how to use them and how to clean them. And we're saying for plastic grocery bags, curb the abuse. Cut back on it drastically. What we'd recommend is something we've been long in favor of, impose a 5-cent fee in stores, something they were looking at in New York City. Give the money to the stores, but impose bag standards. So like the green bag that has lighter weight, uses less plastic, but is stronger, and you can carry more stuff.
I want to tell a story about this bag. Yeah. This is a Hippo Sack bag by Crown Poly. Crown Poly makes, and where are those? Well, anyway, these. Crown Poly makes these bags. It's the produce bag. You've all seen that since on a roll. Yeah. They have 50%, that's why you've seen it. They have over 50% of the market in the United States. Huge produce bag company. I found this bag that they created. They created this bag about 5-7 years ago. and it's got a strip on the bottom called a power strip. And it's very lightweight plastic, uses less plastic, yet it's totally waterproof, much stronger than regular bags.
And it's about 50% bigger, so it could hold more stuff in the supermarket.
Use
and
less
trash.
Bags. Yeah, so why did they do that? Because they wanted to make a trash bag. You carry a trash bag home with your food. And they thought, you know, with all their expertise in the retail sector, they would capture the entire market. The whole environmental movement would come to their doorstep and say, yippee, you solved the problem, which they did. They have solved the problem. And these are more expensive. This one is from the Plaza Food Co-op.
It cost the stores about an extra penny.
We're saying that
if you gave the 5 cents to the stores and said, but instead of spending 2 cents a bag, you got to do 3 cents. Make them standardized so that there would
they
be...
You can make a profit on the bag.
Far fewer bags, and people would treat them with more respect.
And
the other thing
is... Get a great
bag.
I mean, take a look at that.
Get that, the bin that's from here. Get the other bin. No, the one in the corner there. We noticed here that the trash bin from this very room... has a nice plastic bag in it that's draped over the sides. The one out in the hallway, a couple of them are draped even more, like down to here. So you're wasting a lot of plastic. What we're saying is, and there are a number of different bins on the market, if you put this in here like this, and it goes right to the top, this was the whole point, that you reuse these bags, and they don't go to waste, because they have a home. And in this one, where's the green bag?
It's almost back.
Same idea.
Tracy, would you pass the bag back to the...
Now, this is fine. This is fine.
Okay.
Let the invest... Put it in.
You know, I was going to do this a little later in our discussion, but it won't ever fall in. The idea is that you get the entire depth of the bag, and... What we're suggesting is you have bag standards. Like I said, I'm an architect. Everything in this room here, except for the flags, probably the flags too.
Yes.
Everything has a UL number. Everything in your car has a UL number. Everything's tested. It has to meet a standard
to fulfill all
your
purposes.
Pillow under your head and your mattress has a standard that the manufacturer has to meet. The only thing I can think of that doesn't have a standard of these bags, which is why you get this incredible abuse. And what we're suggesting is that it doesn't have to be Hippo Sack bag, it doesn't have to be our bin, but once you design a bag that is a really, really good bag that meets standards, it doesn't leak, it's when you get a really nice bag, you know, you fold it up and you put it away somewhere and I'm going to use this again, you get a crappy bag that has to be doubled, you just go, oh man, you know, now I got all these things. Do I throw them out? Do I reuse them? I've got more than I'll ever need. If you pay 5 cents for a bag, also, you're going to stuff that bag with as much stuff as possible.
And if you know,
you use less bags.
If you know you're getting something for your 5 cents, because one of the problems they had in New York City was that people would object. I got to pay 5 cents now. What is it? I'm getting the same crappy bag. Getting something better
standards.
For it. Then you'll use
bag
it.
Standards.
And if you got a place to put it, then it works
that,
together.
That's going to solve all the problems. Yeah. That's what we think. And you know, we did a pilot at what's the name of the supermarket again?
Fairway
Supermarket in New York City in where's Red Hook in Brooklyn.
Red Hook.
Very popular area, Red Hook, Brooklyn. Very, you know, they don't use yuppie nowadays. What do they use?
Okay.
Hipster. Yeah, showing my age. So we're all kind of, but except for me, except you. No, except me. I'm putting my foot in my mouth. Okay, so we distributed 400 of these bins. They bought $150 worth of food. They had great bags there, and we had a point of sale that showed. It gave all the information about how green it is to reuse your bag, and this is a very hip area. They loved it. They got it. And everybody, you know, in that area, I think, everybody I spoke to reuses their bags anyway for trash. To take that away from them and to have them use two bags, more stuff, and one that's probably dangerous as far as their health, makes no sense. And any legislators who make that up, I got to tell you, you're it could come back to haunt you because this is now known. These studies are known. The Bloomberg study is out there. the Clemson studies out there, the Click and Write study is out there on bags and health. I mean, you're not gonna have a perfect world where you're not gonna have some bags get out in the environment, or a perfect world where some of the I don't know. You probably could have a perfect world. I take that back. Let's do a perfect world. that's our basic story. You can make some stuff.
Yeah, I think we're done. That's it. Did anybody have any questions?
Yeah, but the only other thing I want to say is all of this has been done before. It's been done in Austin, Texas. It's been done in South Australia. It's been done in Ireland. It's been done in a lot of places, and they all have problems, and they all have issues. And I think if you did, what we would suggest is do a pilot with some supermarket chains in the county, and you got to do litter surveys first, and then take out all the bags. Sources where the litter is coming from. You can even do the litter survey and find the source of the litter from the bags that you find. You know, you do this scientifically. And then you eliminate those sources. You tell the sources, look, you know, we're finding your bags on the street. You know, even if it's a black bag, a generic black bag, you say, well, you're passing out generic black bags. Sorry, you can't do that. You got to have your name on it so we know where it came from. And if there's litter there, you're paying for it. You know, they'll stop that litter pretty quickly. So, you know, I think you should have, they should have serial, and they could do this, print serial numbers on all the bags. I mean, it's a lot, you know, it's a lot to enforce and everything, but you're not, you put their telephone number and just call them up, I found your bag.
That's the real bag.
But you're not going to accomplish something by taking the bags out of the supermarkets. You're going to have a lot of other problems. You're going to have a lot more plastic use that's going to go in the landfill. You're going to have problems with health. It's not a good show. That's what we've seen. That's what Professor Klimel will tell you. He'll come down here, if you pay him, I guess. He's a consultant. He'll come down here and he'll tell you just what we're telling. That's why he endorses what we're doing. And you got to come up with somebody who is above Klimel, who can tell us why. Or on his level, who's going to tell us why what we're saying is not true. That's what I'd like to see. I'd love to see that.
Well, it's thought-provoking, and I'll go back and look. I did look at the San Francisco situation, and I don't think that you can derive causality in that situation. The numbers were small. A single produce store that was selling infected produce could have accounted for the differences. It hasn't been replicated. It's troubling, but it's
hasn't
not
been replicated because nobody looked at it.
That's saying the same thing. Uh-huh. And it, you know, it wasn't reported in a peer-reviewed publication, and it would likely have had trouble getting there because of the things I'm saying. I've served as a reviewer for those publications.
Can I say one other thing?
Let us speak.
That they have found bags with all these microbes on them. You know, they've identified the bad stuff. All kinds of lethal E. coli on them.
They also
found bags that make people sick.
Yeah. So I don't want to necessarily get into a back and forth here, but I appreciate the chair letting me, you know, raise my perspective, which is that the life cycle of these bags is important. That's one of the things you're focusing on. And all the bags that you're talking about that you say get reused in a wastebasket then go into the stream. And this may be just a problem with plastic, that we're creating something that we cannot destroy, really. Mm-hmm. And it's just piling up and piling up. So I think we should look at, you know, what the alternatives that the stores are using and maybe make some recommendations on that. You didn't bring examples of the heavier weight reused plastic bags, which can be wiped down and might be less troubling for some of the health issues.
Those are in his report. Those are one of the ones
and,
that we...
And the ban doesn't cover the smaller, the lightest weight plastic bags for the meats and produce to be put in. So I think you're raising concerns, and I'll look again personally. I think that people are ready to make a change and to try to think, to try to do something. And so I'm really reluctant to go back to square one on a project that's been in the work for years. But that's my own personal opinion.
Can I ask you a question? If people forget those heavier plastic bags 40% of the time, which is what all the studies show, then they're getting more and more of those bags. And they show that you have to reuse those heavier plastic bags nine times? And I'm just jogging my memory. Nine times. For the polypropylene, it's 30 times. For those heavier use plastic bags, it's nine times. But they only reuse them three times because they forget them all the time. And so it's still, that's 300% less green than plastic shopping bags, which is a lot. It's not 3%, it's 300%.
Yeah, we're going to keep producing trash, and it needs to be contained in something. That's just a fact. If we want to cut back the amount of trash somehow, the amount of packaging, that's a fantastic goal, and we should be doing that as a society. But as long as we're producing trash, it's got to be safely contained, especially around here when you've got bears, coyotes, whatever, that can get into stuff. You want it safely contained twice, in a bin outside and in a bag inside that, and not have it loose where a bear could pop it open and easily get to stuff.
Tracy?
So, making bear-proof bags.
Yeah, I agree with Kathy. I thank you for coming and for raising concerns, and I'm familiar with many of the reports that you've referenced, not all, so I'll look at some of the others. I know that the gentleman you mentioned, which I don't know if you included in here, but Mr. Gerba, that report was funded by the chemical industry, so that raises questions for me. In terms of the, when you refer to numbers, like 40% of the time people forget the bags, I wish Jordan were here today because she could speak in response to a lot of this in terms of longer-term studies that have happened across the country. And California has had these laws in place for extended periods of time and are representing totally different numbers than you're saying now. The reduction in both plastic bag use, which isn't an option, and even in paper bag use because of the hybrid laws that exist, which are similar to ours, are substantially higher than you're saying. And just even based on...
Wait, I understand. What was the last thing you said about paper?
Paper bag use is substantially lower due to the hybrid, due to the fee. People don't want to spend the five...
We agree with the fee.
They don't want to spend the 5 cents on the alternative. Yeah. So the numbers that we've seen that are published and documented and looked at over extended periods of time, because we're talking about many years on the West Coast, would reflect a much higher percentage of people actually effectively either bringing their own bags or carrying their stuff out in their hand or putting it in a box. I mean, there's all kinds of, it's a change of habit that has been seen pretty much across what we've seen, the documents I've read, the studies I've read, and the anecdotal evidence I've heard, and what I've seen in being in those communities directly contradicts some of the numbers that you're putting out. I will look at the studies that I haven't seen. I mean, just even looking at Mr. Kimmel while you spoke, I see that he's a consultant to the polymer industry. Again, that raises concerns for me in terms of...
You know, I'd like to say one thing about that.
Okay.
He lost his funding from them because he said that particular corporation, they bought the world's biggest paper bag factory company, American Paper Bag or something. And when he came out and said that paper is the worst thing, they cut his funding off. So, you know, one of the problems I have, you know, Brad Lander, who's my city councilman, in the city council meeting on bags in New York City, he got up and said that Sinclair and Gerber were paid off by the plastics industry. Now, I didn't tell, I happen to know Professor Sinclair a little bit, and I didn't tell him that because he would have sued that guy. He would have sued my city councilman probably. Because, you know, to impugn really top-level scientists like Professor Kimmel and this report by saying he got funding from there, I think that's very questionable.
See, that's why you need to look at the whole study, which is what we did, as opposed to what, let's say, if the plastics industry or whatever sponsored something and then selectively released information that matched what they wanted to say. That's not what we look at. We go to the full study and talk to the person who did it so we can see what's really going on. He had trouble getting his information out there. We found it.
That's why we were the only ones to know about it. Because they said that they said you can't even distribute the information because we paid for it. So
right, they owned it and they didn't want it out there because it was negative for them. So it's still valid. It's and that's what happened in the UK when the powers that be said, we don't like that. It's against what we wanted to say.
Would you tell
they didn't want to release it.
Would you tell the state of California and the state of New York to take down from their websites the idea that you have to wash your bags all the time? Is washing your bags all the time green? Does that affect the greenness of the bags? This is what the life cycle analysis reports are saying, that it's not green to wash your bags all the time. So, you know, it may look good that people are using these bags, but it may be that it's a whole heck of a lot less greener, like 600%, than using in supermarkets the plastic bags, because you're going to buy one of these anyway. If you buy anytime you buy stuff, you buy a reusable bag and you buy them all the time because you forget them. People forget them. They do forget them. Anybody I know who uses these has a lot of them, and they throw them away. You can't recycle these. So they get these, and then they get these. Now they're spending a lot of money. Money is resource.
Oh, I'm sorry, but are you suggesting that people, that because the individual carry-out bags exist, people don't have garbage bags in their, they don't have?
Yeah, I don't have any. I know a lot of people. I ask people all the time, and they don't have. Many people use these for various purposes. They use it in their bathrooms. Some people use it as their main main kitchen bag. I know a family, they have six kids. They have three bins, and they throw all their garbage in there because they want to reuse the bags. They don't want to buy the other
bags. Yeah, that's right. We have to use solid waste disposal in Rosendale to pick up our trash. And it's, yeah, put the individual bags, tie them up, smaller bags, throw them in the bin, and then they dump them. There's no need to use a big plastic bag to, you know.
Yeah. Having two of these versus one of these, it's a no-brainer. And having to wash this all the time, I mean, just think about it. It's not possible. Where do you get the magic from? And if, you know, you should be able to tell the state of California and the C. diff Foundation and the state of New York that they should take those web pages down, that you don't have to wash these bags. It's not going to happen because the public health officials know that
we don't want to take their bit.
The public health officials know that their jobs are on the line when something happens. That's why they're up there. That's why nobody. It's not even important to them that anybody knows about it. It's just important that it's there because when it happens, and it is happening, when it happens. They're off the hook. It's their insurance policy. But as I said before, the burden of proof is on people to prove that the bags that they know have the E. coli in them, that they know have made people sick all over the place. They have a number of proven situations where people got sick from bags. The burden of proof on people who say the bags don't make you sick is to prove that they aren't, never, and they're not making, well, they're not going to make you sick. What we've seen is the opposite.
Well, thank you.
I really appreciate you coming.
Thank you for allowing us to.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'd just like to say one other thing. We'd love to do a program with you guys, an education program. We think 5 cents in a really great bag. That people will want to reuse, that it's like a gift that they give, and doing litter surveys to see if once you put this into place, you get less bag litter, that would be great. Then I think everybody would be happy, including us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming up.
Food for thought. Yeah. We got a bunch of these in paper. Maybe they're easy to read.
Do you have a proposed education program now that we can
look at? Yeah, it's in these green folders. I'll just tell you what it's named. Are they in the green folder, Steve?
They should be. Yeah. All right, you put the green folder together, so take a look.
Is this the?
No.
And that's not actually reducing the amount of bags that you're using.
But the New York State comprehensive bag.
Yeah, yeah.
Education issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that reduction?
Yeah, it's reduction. Serious reduction because people pay for the bags. They're going to use less of them. The bags are bigger, standard size. They'll put more stuff more in them. One of the things that we did here, you're using, I don't know, any bag now that they do, they drape it over, they're losing 40% plastic. You do something like this, you're using all the plastic up. That's important. You got to look at every place where plastic is used and reduce it, bring it down.
I'd be happy to talk to our purchasing department about that.
Yeah, don't do this. Don't let them do this anymore. But they'll fall in. You got to keep them falling in. Maybe get a big rubber band to put around it or something.
Just nothing, because just tell people not to put wet.
Yeah, just gather up our wares.
Do they empty those every night?
They have a meeting.
Yeah. It's a very positive.
Often if there's like just papers in them, they'll dump the papers out and leave that same plastic bag in it for days. Especially like in this room, if they have a meeting, we never know what people are going to throw banana peels or whatnot. If it's wet garbage that gets in there, then they probably, and it may not be much garbage, but they'll every once in a while have a party where they fill them up. But they're pretty good if there's recycling in there, they'll take it out.
Okay, so we'll move on to resolution 209.
Does someone want to move it?
Thank you.
Amanda?
Appreciate
it. Do you want to be a co-sponsor?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I want to move resolution 209. I think you are a sponsor.
It's confirming an appointment of a member to the Environmental Management Council.
It's appointing Ken Panza to the Environmental Council. Yes. You want to move it?
I do want to make that motion.
Okay. And a second?
I'll second.
Sure.
Oh, yes.
Okay, do we have any discussion?
Other than to say that I serve with him on the Climate Smart Committee, and we don't always agree, but he's extremely rigorous, and I think he brings a perspective that is refreshing and keeps us on our toes. he does the best reports for the town of Woodstock monthly that are extremely interesting. And
I'm striving to catch up for Kingston.
Great. Thank you, Brian.
Okay, is everyone in favor? Aye.
Where are
okay.
we?
No. We're appointing a member to 209. Appointing a member to the Environmental Management Council. Kenneth Panther.
If I could interrupt, how did we get the endorsement? Did you actually or
the
someone put a resolution?
The town has
a town. So it's not a letter, it's a resolution.
I think there's a town attached.
There's a letter, I believe, from the town.
Yeah.
Because we attached and sent a letter for Mark Ellison.
Yes.
And they still haven't taken any action on it. Now I'm told that we need to do a resolution in this office.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that came up at our last
Mark
meeting. I thought it got hung up
official.
Some.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I thought it got hung up in administration.
And they did that in February.
Yes. I would do? I would call the executive's office and ask about that.
Or call Amanda over it.
But it's Mike. I mean, it's Mike that makes the appointment.
Right.
So I would just call and ask, what the process. But I think there is.
I think there was a problem. I think it was just administrative stuff.
Yeah. I'm not sure that there is a. Requires a.
Well, it says nominated by the governing body of that city, town, or village.
Right.
Yeah.
And
okay,
so the question is what counts as a
nomination?
A letter
a
might
motion?
Not be sufficient.
Yeah, you're right, it might have cleared.
In most of the cases of most of the people, a letter from the supervisor has been sufficient.
Okay,
we have resolution. We have resolution number 263. Authorizing the chairman of Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to accept grant funds under the 2017 Municipal Zero...
Sorry, it should be 2018.
2018.
Yeah. Mm. It was corrected in... Should be corrected in your file. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't realize
that's
it was
right.
wrong
Amendment
in the title,
the 2018 Ulster County budget. We have a note from Ken. Due to a conflict, he won't be able to be at the staff the meeting tonight.
And he said, as you know, we've been aggressively implementing the Green Fleet policy, and this additional charging station to be located at the Golden Hill office building will facilitate our investment in additional plug-in hybrid electric sedans. So does someone want to move
it? I'll move it.
Second? Yeah. It's appropriate. Okay, discussion?
No, I think it's great.
I'm sorry, and that was moved by?
Me.
And seconded by Nana. So no discussion? So we'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, unanimous. We passed. I'm just going to change this. It's changed in... Okay, resolution 264, capital project 501, Chodakee Road site distance improvement, review and approval of the environmental review under a state environment review, classification of project as an unlisted action and approved of negative declaration. Who would like to move it?
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second.
Right.
Sure.
Okay, any discussion?
My understanding is this is the line of sight improvement that involves taking down a structure.
We discussed it before,
and both in Public Works. I know it was discussed, but we also discussed it in caucus at least.
Right, but in terms of the seeker review, if they were just taking down the building, it would have been a type 2 project, but they had to do something else that caused it to be unlisted.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it was minor and it should still go forward.
Okay.
Sounds like a good idea and a positive improvement, a good fix to a long-standing problem.
All right. So all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Motion carries. Thank you.
And let's get one more.
Oh, sorry. And resolution number 265, requesting that the New York State Assembly and New York State Senate introduce legislation amending New York Public Authorities Law, Article 8, Title 13G, Section 2050T, to include recycling materials. So, Tracy, you want to move
discussion.
It? Who wants a second?
I'll second for discussion.
Okay.
So, can I just give the backstory on this? And I'm not intent on necessarily moving this forward today. We can continue to have a discussion. I do think, this has already passed this legislature in its exact form. But it was not moved at the state level. They did not.
When was that?
2012. So the last time around, and I'm expecting it's going to do the same thing this time around, albeit we're at a different time and place in terms of the discussion on recycling, and we've all heard about the challenges that are happening now and that are coming down the pike as they relate to single stream and also as they relate to our whole system. And we heard the mayor of Kingston speak to that at the public hearing for those of us who were there, et cetera. So at that hearing and at the earlier meeting, the board of the RRA talked, this issue came up more than once. And so where confusion comes about is that the language that is in our enabling legislation that precludes us from having flow control over recyclables, which we're the only county in the state, to my knowledge, according to Michael Cahill, the attorney that argued the case before the Supreme Court of the United States, the flow control case on waste, is this language that says shall not include any scrap or other material of value. So in order to essentially right that wrong and put us on a level playing field, in order to allow the authority, which would not mean that we had flow control over recyclables because we would have to pass a law to do that, this just puts us in the position of every other county in New York State of potentially being able to do that. At the last time, many of the supervisors came out, particularly because they were concerned about scrap. And I think that's going to happen again. Because of the language that's before us. This is not...
Tracy, just for clarification, scrap metal.
Yes. Okay. This is not talking about regulating scrap metal. It's just that the language that precludes us from flow control over regulated recyclables
has this word scrap or other material. I cannot imagine a circumstance or a time or a place where this legislature, because it would be this legislature that had to do it, where this legislature would impose flow control over scrap metal. We don't even consider scrap metal a regulated recyclable right now. So it's a lot of fear, because there's a value that right now the municipalities are benefiting from, and I don't see any one of us pushing to change that. We have talked about the need to potentially have a discussion about flow control of regulated recyclables, and as we see what's happening with single stream, and as we see that the unknown is looming in terms of what is going to happen when there's no value on single stream and there's a cost, but what's going to happen when these places that are accepting single stream dry up and it starts to back up, and the DEC is still maintaining that it has to be recycled. What's going to happen as a result, and how are we going to be prepared to deal with it? We are missing a key component as a possibility of even discussion. So, again, scrap metal, essentially, is off the table. Anything that's not regulated is off the table. It's just that I didn't make up this language. This is the language that the founding fathers of the authorizing agency put in, and the only way to correct it is to take it out. And as I said, we've already passed this resolution, but it hasn't been acted upon at the state level. I would like to have further conversations with the supervisors so that they understand, I know there are many new supervisors, so that they understand the intent, because I realize what it looks like on the page makes it sound like we are trying to regulate scrap metal, which is not what at all the intent.
And compostable material.
And compostable, not at all. It's not regulated either.
I heard from a supervisor.
Which actually, I got a call too. And
but it's not the intent.
Right.
Yeah.
They just want it. The supervisors as a group wanted us to be aware of it. They were against the scrap metal, which you've just
I know it well, because the last time, even though it passed, it was a very heated discussion that centered almost exclusively around scrap metal, which, again, I have to reiterate, is not regulated, and I don't see.
And this was same time we were going through flow control.
Yeah, and the only circumstance, I was trying to think about it today to see if my statements were 100%. When I said I could never imagine it being regulated, the only circumstance I could ever imagine there being a situation where scrap would become a regulated recyclable would be the circumstance in which it completely bottomed out, had less than zero value, and the individual municipalities were attempting to throw it away as trash instead, and we would be required to be the agency of last resort, which is what we're seeing with single stream right now. But as long as it has value, there isn't a legislator in this body who would want to take away the financial streams to the individual towns.
Right.
And the cost of doing that, of regulating it and gearing up the agency to switch, it's completely off the table. It's not even a point of discussion. It's just, this is the language that's in our enabling legislation. So striking it is the only way to fix it, which again puts us on a level playing field with every other county in the state, many of whom do not have any flow control over anything. It's just they're authorized to do so if they so choose.
Yeah, because that resolution was 265, and it was June 19th, 2012?
Yeah, December 12th, 2012, we adopted 278, asking the state to do exactly what I'm saying that we should ask again. But again, I'm totally okay with waiting a little longer, and I will reach out to Supervisor Quigley to start with, because I know he's the spokesperson
for the supervisors,
and I'll start with him. But I'm happy to have whatever discussion, and maybe we should bring them in. Certainly, we should have the agency discuss as well.
Yeah, Manna.
Is there some way to put clarifying language regarding scrap metal and composting without compromising the resolution. I know it's cleaner not to.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering how to quell the concerns.
So it is?
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
You report it to WasteWise and you report it to the DEC.
Say again?
You report it to WasteWise, so EPA.
So the compost
it's considered is recyclable.
Compost.
A recyclable material.
Yeah, that's not, but is there some way to reassure the towns that this legislative intent is not to, you know, ultimately
take that away from them.
Take the scrap metal or the compost if they don't, you know, if they
or
don't.
The deposit bottles or the textiles.
Yeah. Well, the deposit bottles are a regulated recyclable, and the towns are in violation if they're taking them. I'm not.
For our contract, it's not. It says in our contract we can take them.
It says in your contract. Okay, so that's a new thing with them. But, yeah, I'm not getting, I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty with any town about what, you know, I just want the county, based on what I heard at the hearings regarding single stream and the long-term discussions, the county to be in a position to address a problem if we have to, which would, believe me, would not be. Remember, for those of us who were here, the flow control discussion was not a one-meeting discussion. I mean, and it was not an, you know what I mean? We're talking about a couple years
of special meetings.
Of special meetings, of special committees. So if this were to pass unanimously today, and next month we said we want to regulate, we want flow control over regulated recyclables only, that would be a hefty task. It would require quite a lot of research, quite a lot of public hearings, quite a lot of debate and discussion and compromise to even get there. So nothing's going to happen overnight.
Right. And as I understand it, this isn't going to, the state legislature isn't going to act on it in this session anyway.
They're
not going to act
on
it until January at the earliest,
if that's
they
why
even
it's not
do.
In a rush.
It's
not in a rush. But I wanted to start the conversation because repeatedly at these meetings we heard we don't have flow control over regulated recyclables, and we ought to have the authority to do that if we need to, as a part of a bigger discussion. You hear the mayor and the haulers talking about piecemealing how we are handling the regulated recyclables right now in terms of the issue of single versus dual stream, et cetera. So that's what this is intended to do. So there's no rush. We don't have to take an action today, but I'll begin with Supervisor Quigley and talking to hear the concerns of the Supervisors Association and hopefully allay some of them in terms of our intent, and I'll talk to that's a good idea.
I remember when this came up before, and we had spoken in front of the agency opposed to it. As far as putting Ulster County on an even playing field, I believe that a lot of the exceptions that we have in our enabling legislation has put us in the forefront. All right, I sit on the NYSAR Legislative Committee. We have pharmaceutical collections there must be at least 50 different locations. We have a paint stewardship resolution, so we already have adopted that policy. I mean, we're so far ahead environmentally than many other counties, because every time I'd say, well, why do you need to do that? Why is there this big push now for pharmaceuticals? Ulster County's doing that. Most of the other counties are not. This legislation says scrap or any other material of value. So again, when it had come up, when Marie Post was around and working up in Saugerties, and she had approached the agency about putting in a composting site and DEC sent her there to get information, she was told, well, you might as well not worry about it because you're not going to have the brush because that's a material of value, so you're going to have to give it to us.
Why?
Because they use it for their composting site.
But why would she have to give it to them? They have no authority.
Because when this law was passed, when they took out the excluding.
No, but see, that's the thing.
But that's a material of value.
No,
it's
but therein
perception.
Lies the confusion. Passing this doesn't. If this were passed, it passed already. And if it were then approved by the state, It doesn't mean it's not in effect.
And then they come back
and
they say, okay, now we want full flow control.
It's not in effect.
Well, until there is.
Yeah. Until it is, yeah.
And that's where the clarification could come in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Around scrap metal and, okay.
Yeah. So, in response to the question about clarification, the third whereas, I believe it is, where it says that...
maybe something...
No, I'm sorry, a second. Whereas the Ulster County legislature remains desirous to include recycling materials on the waste items that may be subjected to a flow control program to help ensure the safe disposal and recycling of waste generated within Ulster County.
Yeah, she just pulled the old one, but that should say maybe, regulated recycling.
Yeah, maybe it could put regulated, and maybe there
definitely.
Could either in that whereas or another whereas say, and whereas Ulster County legislature desires to return to the desires to have the authority. It's really in this language already, but to make it more clear that there would be another step.
But that doesn't. Anytime we've made a request, sent a request to the Assembly and to the Senate, we never.
Talk about next steps.
Yeah, we never talk about next steps because we're asking for something to be amended most often that requires a next step. You know what I mean? If they're changing enabling legislation, and then similar to the most recent one I can think of was the request to allow the sheriff to issue pistol permits. Remember that debate? So there was a discussion about sending the request, and the whole point was, well, he's not getting the authority by this request. We would have to then pass legislation to give him the authority.
So I understand that the members of the Assembly and State Senate understand that, and we understand that. But maybe for the supervisors, I see. You know, you could do it as an educational thing about this language.
Yep.
Or maybe we could ask one of the clerks or the legal staff to help put something in this for the public. And the other comment I have about it is that it also still says DEC Commissioner Joe Martens, and that's now Basil Sagos.
Thank you.
It's just one other observation. If it's going to be regulated recycling, the big box stores no longer will have a need to separate it and put out a clean product. They're going to single stream it all. They'll single stream it all.
If this language
is removed? If you say regulated recycling only, why would a big box store be so concerned about separating everything and keeping it clean
when
they
so
have to send it to the MRF?
We're conflating so many things. The regulated, so I think, first of all, to back up, Kathy, I think it's an excellent point in terms of the third, whereas putting in regulated recyclables, desirous portion. Mm-hmm. And I think your suggestion to have language that speaks to the public's concerns, particularly the supervisor's concerns, as representatives of our individual municipalities, is very thoughtful, and I think we should do that. Laura, to the concept that if, and again, you're jumping one step ahead to us passing flow control of regulated recyclables, which is not where we're at by any stretch of the imagination. But even if you jump one step ahead to flow control of regulated recyclables, if we pass flow control of regulated recyclables, there's nothing. It's not like the person who's creating the regulated recyclables gets to dictate how they deliver it. That's not that
right.
There's never
so
going to be a circumstance
that they have to be source separated. Then
that's part of the flow control law, which is not on the table. It is not on the table. We're not talking about that.
We really can't talk about it.
We can't
because of this language.
Yeah, this we're completely precluded
we're
from dealing
to
with
even
that
think
problem.
About that.
And in terms of we're completely precluded.
But you have to think about the implications.
But we're singularly precluded. And you know, and I do think that we do some things very, very well. But again, having been to many other facilities, you know, yes, we passed a paint stewardship. We passed a request that there be a paint stewardship law, and that's great. I think I was one of the sponsors of that. But in Oneida Herkimer, they have a paint reclamation facility. You know, they have, you can bring your pharmaceuticals to them every day. Every day you can bring your pharmaceuticals, including liquid pharmaceuticals, to them. So we have a fractured system because we're transporting our waste. We're on this committee. We all know that. We're transporting our waste so far away, and our recyclables, we have some, you know, our haulers are doing single stream, and it's leaving the county, certainly, and we're not following up. We're hoping that DEC's following up on it, and City of Kingston's doing single stream, and right now Ulster, and I heard that Ulster's thinking of transitioning back. But I think if we do not prepare for the possibility of needing to, we've been talking about it for so many years, about needing a whole system. When we passed flow control, many of us said that we were going to support the concept of flow control to allow the agency to be financially whole on the back of the users of the system, but only with the promise of a whole system, and we're still not there. So, and what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing at these meetings is very frightening. We may really be, in very short order, be facing something of a disastrous proportion with the potential and inevitable closing of Seneca Meadows. And we're talking not in our grandchildren's future. We're talking in the very near future. Exactly. And what's happening with single stream? I think we need to be prepared to have the debate and the discussion and not have our backs against the wall. But I think we need to do it in a way that includes the supervisors, because the supervisors are going to be and are our partners in this. I mean, we're one county with many municipalities, but this is a problem that we're all going to be facing together. Right now, certain communities are feeling it differently, but I think we're all going to be facing it together. What do you?
One of the things that we might think about using for language here is that whereas this exclusion makes us treat scrap metal identically with other regulated recyclables.
It's to separate out scrap metal.
Right. And we might even bring in something about home rule, because really we've had our home rule just completely taken away by this.
Mm-hmm.
And it may have been back in the days when somebody was afraid there would be some attempt to get the scrap metal. Maybe
I'm sure that's what it was.
It's not just scrap metal, it's all material of value.
Yeah, well, they probably added that in because they figured, oh, well, it might be something else besides scrap mm-hmm. that's
well,
of
maybe
value.
We can Food change. Waste? Let me look into whether or not we can change, to Manna's point of how we allay fears. Maybe we can ask to remove this language and replace it with regulated recycle, allowing the possibility of regulated recyclables to, you know, be held for, I don't know, for flow control. I don't know how. I don't know what the.
I think it probably is cleaner to just.
I know
change
it is, but
this
I'm trying to
and take the next steps step by step with everybody's.
Just looking at this table, we're not moving anywhere fast on the next steps, but I feel like let's...
Well, I just want to, having been there, and Laura may remember as well, Betsy Jordan was a cardboard broker, and she was on the first board. And I think it was perfectly logical back then. Everybody that was doing recycling was doing it in some rented...
facility
container, and the glass company would come and pull the glass, and the cardboard company would pull the cardboard, and metal cans, and everything was separated at the site, and the towns were marketing directly. And then when the DEC wanted all the landfills closed, that's when the system came into place of transfer stations. And because, if I'm not mistaken, the money that went to help close the landfills came through the county. Mm-hmm. And that was part of, and the towns all signed 20-year agreements with the county that included, on a voluntary basis, but in a contractual basis, sending the regulated recyclables, which have been modified once, or maybe even twice since. But that has occurred on a step-by-step basis. We're in a very different time that, you know, would have been hard to predict, that the amount of recyclables means that the quality criteria is more important than ever. And how we achieve that, I hope, will be a collaborative discussion amongst the various parties. But it's very rare that we do a bill memo or a resolution memo, but I do think there needs to be a way of assuring legislative intent to the towns if we're going to move this forward. But it's a first step, and I think it's probably a necessary first step. But, you know, we'll hear from people. And I just want to say, all the good things that we're doing, what happened to the Sharps collection?
Somebody brought that. They've never asked for the donation. They've been telling the organizations that the funding ran out. There wasn't ever any
there
funding.
There was no funding.
No, we
asked that those containers be donated by the manufacturer for a Sharps collection.
So happens when you chase out all the people who know stuff.
And, you know, I don't know what people do with Sharps, but in
those days... They still have the program. You can still drop them off.
It's
they're just not
hard.
Providing the containers.
You can drop them off at pharmacies and hospitals.
The hospitals.
And it's hard to find. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I found myself with some Sharps that weren't mine, and I had a really hard time finding where to bring them. I ended up going across the river just because...
Wow. Yeah.
But if I were less diligent, I probably, you know, would have ended up throwing them out because it was not simple.
You can put them in a milk container table.
I know, but it's just, yeah, there should, it needs to be easy. And that's same thing with the pharmaceuticals. Like I said, in the circumstance where I found myself with a lot of liquid pharmaceuticals after my father-in-law's passing, and they were heavy duty, you know, narcotics, and I was told at the police station that I couldn't drop them.
The
good news was I had already dropped them, but I was told I couldn't. And what would I have done? You know, I don't know where I would have gone with these bottles of...
It's a new thing, I guess, we could offer to a family. Like, I will take a shovel into the woods and take care of your pharmaceuticals for you. Because that would possibly...
Leach into somebody's well.
Yeah, well, that's
well,
not
but
good.
But you'd have to be far enough away from a water source.
No.
Yeah.
But they are taking them at the household hazardous waste.
Yeah, at the house, yes. Yeah. But that's only twice a year.
At the household hazardous
waste. Three times a year.
And it's a limited location.
Not the Sharps. The Sharps, I think, are still...
That's important.
Sharps containers are missing. Anyway.
You can call Becton Dickinson and ask if they'll donate, and they tell them to get in touch, or...
Yeah. So what do we want to
I don't
say?
Want to take an action
so
today.
We'll just take
today. Take no action. And like I said, I'll reach out to the supervisors, and I'll also take the suggestions from today and rework the language as best I can and come back with reworked language, and we'll see.
But you're talking businesses and everything, right? Commercial right across the board. So
I'm not talking any of that. You're talking two steps ahead. I'm just talking about putting us in the position to potentially deal with a tremendous problem that right now we have no way of dealing with.
But it's not. It's being handled. It's not a tremendous problem.
I'm talking about a future problem. Okay. I'm talking about a future problem.
And every other county in New York has the option to deal with all of their waste as they see fit.
Mm-hmm.
This language prevents Ulster County from even considering some of those options. And if we need those options 3 years from now, and we haven't done something this year, we will not be doing it. We will not have the option.
And also, Laura, if for use the example of single stream. If it comes to a point where they say where all these, just let's imagine one horror scenario. Let's say that single stream no longer can be processed or sold anywhere. Period. And the DEC maintains its current position and says you still have to recycle everything because nobody said you had to go single stream, right?
Right,
so,
right.
So now, right, I agree. So now you have all this single stream backing up. Let's say all the single stream from all the private haulers, and I'm just thinking on the fly, and from the city of Kingston, all of it. They say, okay, we're gonna bring you dual stream to the MRF. It may be too much for the MRF to handle. The MRF may need new things.
The MRF was handling it before. They had two shifts on. Now they're down to 2 days a week. The MRF can handle it. It's not the MRF. It was the administrative decision to take it single stream. And
that
now
was
allow
decision.
Over the last 12, 13 years for everybody to invest tens of thousands.
Yep.
Even SUNY New Paltz said, what are we going to do? We just bought $53,000 in new equipment.
And I heard that the town of New Paltz or village of New Paltz was considering going with a single stream hauler too. I mean, it's... Yeah.
Oh, they already did.
They did?
Yeah, as of June 1st. So, and it's one hauler. So the county waste, who doesn't recycle, does the town and village.
What do you mean
they're
they
the only
recycle?
Ones allowed in... Well, when their container gets full on one side, they just throw the recycling in the other, and they dump it. But this is a real... If you go to the agency transfer station, it'll be a real eye-opener for you.
Mm-hmm.
That the amount of stuff that they allow to come in
that's
that is recyclable, that's contaminated. Now they don't want to take the rigid plastic anymore, which is the children's toys, because they don't want any more single stream. Then they're only going to be charging $40 a ton, I think was the newest rate, when Tim Rose said they're paying between 60 and 70 a ton. So
for the single
it's
stream.
Still there's still a lot of administrative issues there.
Yeah.
And you know, to then say, well, all regulated, you know, when we get to that point, okay, and that will happen. We want all regulated recyclable material. You're going to get to the point where the towns in 2015 were basically being strong-armed into either signing a contract or maybe the agency just wouldn't service them at all. And that was a big deal. So some of those towns said, okay, don't service us at all, and they went to single stream. That is the cheapest way to do it. You throw everything in one container. So are you going to regulate the recycling and then go back to source separation in another law, thinking forward?
Also, we have to remember that we're going
to
consider
what we're going to have to do. Yeah.
That's why you want to have all your options.
But because you're already thinking ahead to single stream crashing and not being able to take it at all. So
well, not that that's happening right now.
Today.
It is.
That's happening right now.
I understand that.
But we also have to remember that we're considering getting involved in GUS, and we would be the only county.
If GUS were to happen, all of our, the three of our enabling legislations, I'm assuming, would be scrapped for a new one that was called GUS or whatever.
So why not do that then? Instead of trying
I'm not sure that GUS is going to happen.
But this,
yeah.
this could
GUS
be.
Will happen?
No, I'm not sure that it's going to happen.
But even if it does happen, this restriction on us could be cause enormous problems for us.
Well,
if the other counties wanted to do this in some form and we can't.
I think we'd have a whole new enabling legislation for that authority.
For all three?
From
yes.
New York State, yes.
Yeah. I
well,
think
that
for,
is
yeah,
an option
for GUS.
Then. Yeah.
But I don't, again, not knowing what's going to happen, I am not, based on my experience in this legislature, I am not fearful that this legislature and my colleagues are going to rush into flow control of regulated recyclables. If we had the authority right now, I do not think there would be any action on flow control of regulated recyclables at this moment. I do not think that would be a point of discussion at this moment.
Even considering that a $4 million MRF is only operating 2 days a week?
Yes.
At
this moment,
money.
No.
Okay.
At this moment, no. But I mean, I think it would be a worthwhile discussion. I just don't see... I think it's so controversial. But I feel like we are going to... You know, we're gonna find our backs against the wall. We're going to find ourselves in a really difficult position. And I'm just trying to give... To prep us to have options. But I'm not saying that we're going to move forward. And it's not... I'm not alone. This has been a point of discussion at these meetings repeatedly about how we are unique in this circumstance. I do not want any supervisor to think that in any way we're talking about scrap metal. I do not,
or
again,
compost.
Or compost.
Or
I do,
waster, yeah.
Yeah, I do not imagine a circumstance, particularly where scrap metal, I cannot even imagine.
Because the agency's got two. In fact, they asked, well, how would you like it if we operated your New Paltz transfer station. They're going to need leaves and brush. So if this recyclable material value suddenly becomes a real value to them, then they're going to ask to have that regulated.
And then we'll have to look at it. I mean, you make the case that maybe, you know, with a $4 million facility that's not being maximally used, maybe it would make sense. And if it could happen in such a way that it didn't hurt the towns. But but the towns will be hurt if we don't have a way to deal with waste and recyclables.
Yeah, so I think sometimes it's balancing two hats. It's like, right, exactly, it is us. We have to think about the good of the county, but that also... while thinking of the good of the towns, I don't want to see us in a situation where we're pitting individual municipalities, and that's sort of what it feels like, I think, for some at this moment in this discussion, because of decisions that were made that, to my mind, and I was vocal then, were not wise decisions. But I think that we, as legislators, not as constituents of our home municipalities, but as legislators, I think we need to think beyond and need to be thinking about the big picture. And right now, we have one hand tied behind our back that nobody else has tied behind their back. So I'm just trying to write what I see as a inequity in our enabling legislation. I'm not yet having a discussion about flow control. Now,
I don't think it is an inequity. I think it gives Ulster County that uniqueness and that opportunity to do more.
Why?
Because it gives us the ability to handle it instead of hoping an authority that hasn't really proven that they've administered things quite the way they should be could handle it better than individuals like Betsy Jordan and the haulers that were marketing their material and New Paltz, who has a zero waste action plan, who's handling materials that no one else is handling yet. Mm-hmm. So it gives us that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen the agency, honestly, working on the inside. I don't have confidence they're going to be doing what they need to be. There's a lot more that they could be doing.
So we
that
have
MRF
to force that. We have
right
to be
now.
Pushing that. That's the point. It's like
they're going to say they're an autonomous.
No, but we do that by who we put on the board. Mm-hmm. We do that by communication with them. That's what we have to do. I mean, if that's the case, that's a different discussion. I mean, I think that, and if that's the case, that if we had the right to institute flow control over regulated recyclables, but there was
C&D then. Shouldn't we do C&D too, since they need the weights?
Since they need the weights for waste?
Yeah, for the put-or-pay agreements with the landfills.
No, I don't want to see C&D going to the landfills. I mean...
But it does. It's just not... It's just... There's no flow control on it.
Well, that could be a discussion to have. Are you suggesting you think that's a good idea? Or are you being devil's advocate?
I'm trying to be facetious, because depending on whose purpose it serves the best, that's how we've been making the decisions. So every other county has full flow control over all of their garbage and the recycling, but not Ulster County.
I would imagine that this language would cover C&D, actually.
That's what I was just going to check.
So? Because it says, if there was a moment, not value as waste, it has to be material separated from the waste stream as having a singular value.
Right.
So if, for example, the agency if right now the agency said, we want to put in, like some of the facilities we've seen, a C&D recycling facility, there's no way they could get the numbers right now. And if they came to us and said, we'd like to invest $10 million on a facility and we want to capture it all and recycle it, not put it in the waste stream, there's no way that could ever make sense. Not right now, because it's going elsewhere. So
do we have any new business? Any other new business?
I think.
Or did you have?
I think they've
been. Oh, not new business.
It's old business.
It's not new business.
So we can do old business first,
again.
Sorry.
Case in point.
Yeah. Dave, would you like to share anything
with us
today?
A couple things. I will not be able to make the meeting on the 19th. You're on the public hearing, and I wanted to be here tonight. I'm hoping some members of the Environmental Council will be there, and we will be formulating a letter in support of the legislation, but that will come after that public meeting. You'll receive that afterwards, because our meeting will be at the end of the month. But
in support of which legislation?
Plastic bag.
Plastic bag, okay. Sorry. Yeah. Personally, I certainly support the legislation as it's written, in its hybrid fashion, in its ability to go across the board, small and large, in its being able to separate out meats and produce and those things in those smaller plastic bags, which will help preclude some of the problems this guy would say exist. All of it, as Tracy mentioned, requires a change in habits of us. And I think they were picking various sources to support their agenda. I think I come from a medical background, so multiple studies to collaborate, as you mentioned, is really important. This whole thing about intestinal problems. I was just thinking about C. difficile. I mean, it's the most common, I was a physician assistant, I'm sorry. Most common sources there are hospital visit, being in the hospital, and being given too many antibiotics over too long a period of time. By far, that's the greatest portion of people that get C. difficile, not from these bags. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist occasionally and they can't find existing evidence of that. I mean, look at this recent E. coli thing with the lettuce that's going around the country with X number of deaths. Has nothing to do with bags. Before you all got here, you made an interesting comment to me. You said plastic bags are made from natural gas, and somehow that was supposed to mean, well, that's okay. And I don't see that okay because of all sorts of problems with fracking, methane, gas release, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The whole issue of the number of bags given and the number of bags reused. Yes, people do reuse them. I reuse them. I recycle heavily. I might reuse one bag a week, maybe two at the very most, because I recycle pretty heavily. Versus the 10, 12, 15 bags I see people going out with their Sharpie carts full of. I just don't see those figures that he's giving. I don't know where he found those. And, I mean, you all know, okay, so he says the whale just swallowed the black plastic. I don't know that he knows that necessarily. He saw some black plastic in the whale. We know that plastic's getting into the oceans. There's this huge multi-state spot in the Pacific Ocean that's just full of plastic. We know that the aquatic species, whether it's turtles, porpoises, whatever, are eating this stuff and dying from it. We know that it's clogging up our systems at recycling. We know it's clogging drains, storm drains and everything else. We know it's costing a lot of money to be picking up this stuff and then trying to figure out what to do with it. It's important. A lot of it does deal with education and changing people's habits and getting them used to other. I mean, go back a ways. Didn't we all have a metal tin that we put our recycling in and you threw that into wherever you were going to go to and then you washed that out and that was certainly recyclable and it was there. It means maybe more innovations so that we don't have to use another plastic bag. There'll be other things that people will come up with and say, we can do this. But you have to take those first steps. And though he poo-poos the places that have been doing this, you've got at least 5 countries in the world and numerous other countries now, Britain, other countries in the EU, are on their course within a number of years to ban plastic bags. It's coming, and if we can do it, and I think doing it right, and I think people will find alternatives. And that means they have to recycle better, and they have to use less carry out everything. I don't know, but you have to wash bags all the time. I'm certainly not into that, but
And education is important. When
it
we
is.
Brought it forward, what was that, 2011, was it, 10?
I think it was 10.
I didn't see plastic bags for the longest time along the side of the road, because we used to stop and take pictures just to justify why we wanted to bring the law forward.
In the village?
Well, this was throughout Ulster County. It didn't pass because it was a surcharge. Where's the surcharge going? So it was very kind of mucky. Mm-hmm. This one's much cleaner. And there were more people showed up for that, I think, up until the Repeal Act. Mm-hmm. And they had, you know, televisions here so folks could follow up. More people showed up for that public comment than I've ever seen. The place was packed.
Wow.
So the information got out. It was education.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's built into the bill. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and the whole program of having right at the checkout, having signs.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I also think, I mean, I feel like it's coming for the state as well. I mean, you're hearing more and more conversations. I don't think it's going to be Cuomo's bill. I'm keeping my fingers crossed it's not. But, I mean, I'm feeling more optimistic about it happening statewide. I think it's just the tide is slowly shifting. It's like we've all been talking about it for so long that it feels like forever. And sometimes that brings you down a little. But I think it's happening. So I think what will be great if we can pass this the way it is in Ulster County is we'll help to define, hopefully, what will happen at the state level, which this is the bill that the environmental organizations are behind in terms of the hybrid. So that would be great. Thank you, Dean.
You're welcome. And the only other thing, just in comment with your comments about the pharmaceuticals, we may have 52 sites, but they're limited in terms of hours. They're limited in terms of availability and ease. I mean, the ideal is to be able to take your used, outdated, expired, unused pharmaceuticals back to the pharmacy and have them recycled. That's got to be the goal.
Do they close?
Yeah, it should be.
The police stations are usually open.
They're not always staffed. That's the problem.
I've been told in
town of Shangham. Yeah. Well, if you show up at the time we're changing shifts, that's the best time. So that means, you know, 7 to 8 in the morning, 3 to 4 in the mm-hmm. afternoon. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You think they want their customers coming back into the store another time? Mm-hmm. It's another chance to sell them something.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
No,
but Socrates Police Station is 20. You can go and lobby anytime.
Yeah. Well, KPD is the same. But you know what? I've had a bottle of a prescription. That I've had it for 3-4 months. Yep. I've been meaning to get down there. It's open 24 hours a day. It's about 4 minutes from my house. And guess what?
Because it's a special trip.
It's a special trip out of the way.
I hope it's not
the
a liquid.
Bill
no,
the
it's
state.
Not. No.
Then you're in trouble. You can hang on to it.
No. The bill at the state level to require pharmacies to take back the pharmaceuticals is still being worked at to get a bill that both houses can accept.
Is it only the bill at the state level? Is it only the chain pharmacies, or is it all pharmacies?
I think it was the chain pharmacies. It was the larger ones, but that will cover a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We should consider it at a county level.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. You could do that. See, because Ulster County is always in the forefront. Yeah.
Another chance to get your customer back in the store. What retailer doesn't want their customers going in the door again? More than likely. Or at least 80% will.
I think I will. Yeah. I'll look at the state. I'll bring it for next month for discussion.
I'm just surprised they didn't.
Matt? Can I do the Climate Smart Committee?
Sure.
Okay.
You're done, right, Jane?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And just to segue, the Climate Smart training went extremely well. There were over 45 people. We didn't quite get everybody to register, but mostly. And about a dozen trainers. And one of the things the participants did toward the end of the event was give us suggestions. After they had done all their learning and gotten into small groups and talked with each other, they gave us feedback and, you know, things like we'd like to have a script, even though we're not going to read the script, just have that conversation ready at hand. And one of the themes, and it came up several times, is single-use plastics. So since almost everybody on the Climate Smart, actually, Brian, I think you're the only one that wasn't there, but the other four people were at a steering committee meeting, and they agreed to add, we'll bring it back to the Climate Smart, but they wanted to add number 8. Didn't mean to at all. Number 7 right now is other, but it will become significantly reduce the use of single stream plastic, and it's not just plastic bags, it's straws, it's forks, all of those containers. God. If there are ways that restaurants and food services can significantly. And at first I said, I think that's a little far-fetched, but Tom Conrad did a life cycle analysis, and including the greenhouse gas emissions, and it was really impressive. So I think that's why they added that in. But the main thing I want to just say is that on Wednesday, June 27th, at 7:30 in the morning, and let's pass these down, there will be a Green Building Challenge launch for the, this time it's targeted at the businesses. We've invited all the volunteer ambassadors that took the training to come. I don't know that they all will, but many will. And the trainers, but the speakers at the chamber style breakfast, the week after the chamber breakfast on June 27th, are all going to be people that, businesses that have on their own prior to the Green Business Challenge done really significant things, including Frost Valley, including the folks that are on the front of this who did an energy retrofit and saved, you know, thousands of dollars. Very short payback. Lighting is typically 2 years, and then everything after that is savings.
Bread Alone
is a featured speaker. And... you know, they're going to be 7 or 8. Iron Mountain hasn't confirmed yet, but long ago they did geothermal, they've been doing green stormwater, and now they're putting solar on all their open space, for which they had to get some kind of variance or permit or whatever, but they're moving ahead in Rosendale, so... happy to see that in New Paltz, Mohawk, and I think there are a couple others. There's some really small vendors that didn't so much want to be featured. They just did it because it was going to save them money, and you know, we're still working out the details. But that's basically what it's going to be: is case studies, people telling their own story, business to business. And then that will be followed by a vendor show, and I think we're about half full already in terms of registrants and participants and vendors. And then after the breakfast and the speeches are over, and I think the county executive is going to give them certificates of appreciation as green business leaders. And then... we're going to use the breakfast tables, the 10 breakfast tables, as kind of speed dating. If you want more information on photovoltaics, the solar experts are here. If you want to talk about electric vehicles, you can go to this table. And we'll do that for another hour or so. So that's the morning launch. And the ideas are... flowing so fast and furious, it's hard to keep up with them. One person who registered was talking about promoting bicycling to work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's clearly... So at this point, I think we're going to stay with the seven that we have, and then there'll be a category called other, for example, and we'll have those. And if somebody comes up with... As long as it's really a climate issue, not just a general pollution issue, it really has to be a climate solution. So it's coming... It's taken a life of its own, and it's moving forward beautifully, and I invite all of you to come out on the 27th and hear the stories and see if there's some businesses that are not already participating that might. I guess the one other thing, many of you were aware of Tim Guinea's presentation on climate change and hope. And the Climate Reality Project has this 100% challenge, but it goes until, I think it's 2030, before you actually have to be generating 100% of your own energy or purchasing it. And that's and a lot of businesses and towns in Ulster County have taken that pledge. So that's another starting point, is to go back to those businesses and say, you know, the incentives may be better now than they will be in 2020 or 2030. So, and the need is now. The need is urgent. So, the county reached out to their entire list. That is the Office of Economic Development. And they have 3,200 businesses or business contacts. So it's a really interesting cooperation between the legislative branch and the executive branch. And I'm thrilled to see how well it's been going. At some point, they are going to have to hire somebody because it's kind of taken over my life. That don't put that in the middle.
It's on tape.
It's on tape. It's on tape. That's all right. That all right. Any questions about that? That's my news, and I was up in Albany yesterday.
Oh, for
the plastics bill.
And how did that go?
Met with. Senator Krueger is.
Oh yes, she's the sponsor.
That's the sponsor of the bill that I think most of the environmentalists are supporting, and it's very similar to our bill. The difference is that's a 10-cent fee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know whether it'll survive the process, but
and I think for a portion of their fee, yeah. I think a portion of their fee. It doesn't all go to the business, I don't think, because it's because it's
only
a state
bill. 20% goes to the
business. Yeah, it goes to a fund.
80% goes to the Environmental Protection Fund and can be used for education and, you know, so forth.
Right.
But the Speaker Heastie's representative said, you've got to get consensus. You got to get everybody behind this bill, and then we'll bring it, or a bill, mm-hmm. and then we'll bring it forward because there's several different versions. So we'll see. Okay. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Is there anything else anybody would like to discuss? No? Do we have a motion to?
So moved.
Okay, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.